Joseph Pasek of barnburner.ca, our daily podcast entitled Fired Up. And once again, we're fired up. The Hall of Famer, yes, the Hall of Famer, John Nelson of Owens Sports is, what, are you Ric Flair now? Come on.
Yeah,
I'm back here. Yeah, woo, come on. He's back here from OSG Sports in Atlanta. We're going to talk about our favorite footy, the MLS. It's decision day this weekend for a lot of teams in the MLS. Now, an interesting to note here, I'm in Toronto, you're in Atlanta. Toronto and Atlanta play each other, and basically Toronto's home and cooled out, but are they? Because last week they tied the record for the most points in MLS, and in your opinion, do they go for the record, or do they just relax some players?
Well, let's put it this way. I think that they'll go for it in the first 45 minutes at Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Sunday. Every game, remember, every game starts 4 o'clock Eastern time on Sunday, regardless of location. And don't know which game's going to be national, but I imagine if you're in front of the TV, you're going to be bouncing back and forth among a lot of the games. I think that Toronto sizes up where they are. If they're trailing at the half, then they'll rest folks. If they're tied or leading, then it might be trying to put the pedal down for another 15 to 20 minutes and then try to coast into the bar. I think you just have to pay attention to what Toronto is doing in the matchup against Atlanta. And if you're just going to be scoreboard watching, everybody's going to be doing a lot of that. So keep an eye on the scoreboard. Keep an eye on what Toronto's up to. If they're winning, it's one philosophy. If it's a draw or losing, it'll probably end up being something else.
Now, based out of Atlanta, do you want to play Toronto the last week? Well, you have to, but did you want to play Toronto the last week of the season? Coming off Toronto, if they win or tie, breaks the record for most points in the MLS. But Atlanta's fighting from 2-5 in the Eastern Conference, and that big second seed, you get a week off.
Yeah, and that's Atlanta's going to come in, and they're going to be chasing that second seed. Because the way that things work out, if my math is correct, Atlanta wins, then they're looking for either draw or loss from Chicago or NYCFC, then going to the second tiebreaker goal difference. Atlanta United would get the two seed. So Atlanta United has a lot to play for, and I think that obviously losing Leandro Gonzalez-Pires on the back line to yellow card accumulation is going to hurt. Wouldn't surprise me if you saw Bobby Boswell playing at the back and getting his first appearance in an Atlanta United kit, having that experienced presence back there for a game like this. That was why he was picked up at the trade deadline from DC United. The lineup might look a little different. You might have some combination of Mikey Ambrose and Chris McCann on the left. You might have Anton Walks move to the inside. You might have Walks over on the edge. So the back four might look a little different for Atlanta United, but they don't have any choice. They have to go for the win here in this situation to get the two seed, and that way they take the onus of getting that two seed out of the hands of NYCFC in Chicago and put it in their own hands.
Now you mentioned NYCFC. They got 56, Chicago's at 55, Atlanta's at 54, and Columbus 53. Columbus, I believe, plays NYCFC, correct?
Yeah, at Citi Field.
Yeah, so that is a, if Atlanta beats
Not Yankee Stadium because of the Yankees, but Citi Field. So they will be playing on the same dimensions that they play on that U12 surface at Yankee Stadium. They will transform those numbers to Citi Field. And so now I'm looking for Mr. Met to start flipping off Columbus Crew people, you know, for the matchup on Sunday afternoon.
And, okay, so I'm going to go on a limb here. Okay, 1-6, give me your order of finish in the East, and then we'll touch on the West a little bit.
All right, so let's see. 1-6 are easy because those are locked in. Toronto is the 1, Red Bulls are the 6. 2, 3, 4, and 5, probably. Let's go Atlanta United, Columbus, Chicago, NYCFC, just because I think that Columbus should go into NYCFC or go into Citi Field and take care of business there, which brings them up and then creates a bit of a logjam. But I think Atlanta United gets the win, probably something like 2-1 or 3-2. Then you'll end up with Atlanta at the 2 and then everybody else 3-4-5.
All right. Now, which team, in your estimation, in the East can surprise everybody? If I ask you, do you think TFC will be surprised in the first or second round? But who do you think will surprise? Forget about Atlanta, because we're Atlanta with Toronto. But out of those teams that you mentioned.
I'd have to go with Columbus if they're going to surprise anybody because of what they've been able to do the last couple of weeks. You know, everybody thought that because they had all the games in the barn that they weren't going to be able to do anything and that they were going to be finished up and waiting for everything else to happen. But when you've gotten Justin Miram to full song, he's been doing really well. Kamara has been doing fantastic. You know, they've been able to catch fire the last handful of games and get to where they are. So if anybody's going to surprise, it would be Columbus just because they've been kind of flying below the radar despite what they've done in the standings.
Okay. So you're listening to John Nelson, the Hall of Famer of OSG Sports. Now we're going to break west, and I don't know where to start, at the top or the bottom. you got confusion galore. First place at 52 points. Portland, Seattle have 50. Sporting Kansas City, 49. Houston, 47. Now, the bottom, San Jose, FC Dallas, Real Salt Lake. San Jose, FC Dallas with 43. Real Salt Lake with 42. Who makes the top six out of eight?
Wow. Sporting, I think, had their chance to win the conference title. I think it's going to come down to either Portland or Seattle. How's that for a cascade of finish? But I still think that they'll be 1-2. Yeah, I know. So you've got all that madness going on up there. I don't, you know, I think Vancouver might have been found out. So it'll be interesting to see how Vancouver responds to the recent slide that they've had. And, you know, when you get thumped the way that you do by Red Bulls and then, you know, you're still trying to get your sea legs about you. I think that those are your four at the top. And then trying to figure out, I think San Jose might be odd man out. And that to me would be the way that it might go down. It's like I said, there's going to be a whole lot of heads on a swivel trying to figure out what the deal is. And I think San Jose still is just a year away from having a tremendous, very, very young team that can do a lot of good things. I think that FC Dallas will work their way in. And I think that Houston gets in. So, you know, I'm looking at Real Salt Lake and San Jose out, Houston and Dallas in to go with the other four.
All right. Now, if I asked you, we're one match remaining in the season, what was the story of this season for MLS?
The story of the season? I mean, I think it would have to be Atlanta United, wouldn't it?
I knew you were going to say
everybody
that.
Was saying, okay, well, but, I mean, think about it. I mean, it's a first-year franchise. I mean, it wasn't built to be an expansion team. First-year franchise. And considering what they've done and what they've been able to do as a first-year team to be in the hunt for one of the top seeds in the East as a first-year team, not like their expansion brothers, Minnesota United, who finally found their sea legs after they picked up Ethan Finley, Sam Cronin, and let Abu Dhanlati start. But I think that really what Atlanta United has done on the field, what they've done off the field with averaging 40,000 plus, we know that for the game Sunday there's going to be at least 70,000 in the building. They will break their own single game attendance record that they set earlier this season when Orlando came to town. So I think that what they've done to show MLS that the South will support soccer. I think that really that to me has been the story of this particular MLS season, and it will be as long as, you know, you bring in teams like a Nashville, which looks like they might be a part of the next wave, and introducing these markets to everyone else who only thought of them as other sport markets, but then you come in and you see, okay, Nashville's throwing all this corporate support behind the building of a new stadium out by the fairgrounds there. Atlanta United, you have a brand spanking new building where the soccer team was a co-tenant, not just a little brother. It was built for both football and football. So, you know, to me, it's a no-brainer that this is the story of the season. Tata Martino should be coach of the year because of what he's been able to do. And I'm fairly certain that David Villa probably still will be MVP. I think Julian Gressel will be rookie of the year. And when you build a winner, people will know that you're building a winner. And you've got Joseph Martinez, Miguel Almiron, who's now being looked at by Arsenal and Inter Milan. So for me, Atlanta United, what they've done in building up to this season and putting it out there for this season, that to me is the story of the year.
Okay, two final questions with the Hall of Famer John Nelson of OSG Sports. Now, last week we had you on discussing U.S. not qualifying for the World Cup.
Ugh.
Now, what effect do you think are the players going to have heading into the playoffs specifically? You know, there's a couple of players here who play here, the captain of Toronto FC, is there, like I mentioned to you in the podcast before, is there a little bit more of a oomph because we lost, we didn't make the World Cup, but at least we can be champions of our league?
Yeah, I would think so. At least you would hope. But it also makes you wonder where they are physically right now and how much someone like a Greg Vanney is going to have to look after their minutes, or is it just a sprint to the finish and minutes be damned and we're going to do what you do? And since you don't have international duty anymore for probably a year and a half, really, is it just pedal down and, you know, you can rest in the off season? So, you know, what's Vanney's approach going to be? I think that is something that you have to pay attention to going forward here in the playoffs is, are minutes going to be massaged? I think that first step might be the minutes that you see against Atlanta United. You know, are they pulled at 45? Are they pulled at 60, depending on the result that's on the Halo board? So I think that might be your first indication of getting folks ready for the bye week and getting them back to being healthy for the conference semifinals.
All right, and the final question, you mentioned it, Nashville possibly joining MLS, but any other team you heard joining MLS next year or the following year? We all know LAFC or whatever they're going to be called themselves, but
yeah.
And there was talk of like St. Petersburg or Tampa, but Al Langfield is not ready or they don't want to go to that. Nashville, Cincinnati. If I asked you, let's say, if we're in 2020, how many teams will be in MLS then?
Well, I think you're adding three more just to get your even number to come in with LAFC, and I think that those three are probably Sacramento, Cincinnati, and Nashville. And I still think that Beckham United FC is still trying to figure it out down in Miami, and I think that they really should be thrown back into the hopper. And I think that they have forced MLS to wait entirely too long about trying to get into a top-10 media market. And I think that that's a shame for everyone in South Florida because you're getting an instant rival in Orlando City, and you're getting a lot of people who are interested in the sport. You're getting big names in behind it, and you can't get a stadium deal done. So, frankly, I would put in Cincinnati, and I would put in Nashville, and maybe even a Raleigh might be in this mix. So, you know, I think that you go with three, whoever those three are, and I think that Sacramento's ready to go. They're in.
Yeah.
Nashville seems to be ready to go. We have to wait for the Board of Governors meeting in December to figure out if they go in. And then the third one, is it Cincinnati? Is it Raleigh? Where do you go to try to expand your footprint? Cincinnati has great crowds, but the issue is at the University of Cincinnati football stadium at Nippert and whether or not that's a long-term solution. It's not. They've made a great home of it in the USL, but they want to have a riverfront stadium either on the Cincinnati side or on the Northern Kentucky side, and they're still trying to figure out the logistics of that. So, yeah, I think that it's ready-made stadium deals. I think that it's teams ready to go. I think it's fan bases who are ready to go. And I think it's going to come down to three teams, four spaces, Raleigh, Cincinnati, Sacramento's in, Nashville's probably in. So two for one spot probably.
Now, with USA not making the World Cup of Soccer, and arguably U.S. never been higher on footy or soccer, what a downfall is that for MLS? Let's put it that way, because, you know, U.S., when they make the World Cup, people are into it and all that. And now that they didn't, does that affect the MLS also?
I think it gives the MLS an opportunity to sit there and say, okay, let's build local talent. Let's build American talent. Let's build this league and make it more comparable to the other national leagues that are around the world. It gives them a chance to put their flag in the sand and go, okay, this is us, this is our identity, and this is what we're going to do in building our league forward. So I think it's an opportunity, and it also gives, you know, guys like Tyler Adams, who's 18, plays for New York Red Bulls, a great young American talent. It gives him a place where he can showcase himself, and if it's a Tab Ramos or a Peter Vermes or whoever the new coach is that's going to be looking after things, probably Tab Ramos in the interim, that you would have something like that be a showcase place for young American talent. So I think that it gives the MLS a window to sit there and showcase itself to the national team side. It gives people who want to play on the national team a place to do it, and it also gives MLS the opportunity to sit there and say, okay, we're a quality league, we're a growing quality league, and here's a couple of examples why with young talent.
You've been listening to the Hall of Famer, John Nelson of OSG Sports. John, tell everybody how they could get a hold of you.
Well, you can listen to us here on the Barnburner platform, barnburner.ca. You can follow me at OSG Nelson on Twitter. You can follow OSG Sports on Twitter. And you can keep an eye on us at Soccer Down Here on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. Jason Longshore, Jared Smith, and I, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Glenn Eastern, Blog Talk Radio, syndicated on ESPN Coastal. You can also listen to it on barnburner.ca as well. So any and all those social media platforms, reach out to us, like us, friend us, be a part of the conversation, and we'll catch up with you there.
And by the way, Soccer Down Here, one of the greatest podcasts soccer-wise in the country. Check it out on barnburner.ca every Monday to Friday. And also OSG College Football Monday and Wednesday on barnburner.ca. And stay tuned for an announcement by John and OSG on Barnburner regarding some other sports coming to Barnburner and OSG. Thanks a lot, and hopefully Toronto FC shuts down Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks
you're
a lot,
funny.
John.
You're a funny guy. But you're a funny guy, Joe. That's
I'm
why. That's why
guy.
I love you, my friend.
You want to put some money on this match or what?
I'm a journalist. I don't put money on matches.
I'm a journalist. Okay, you're a broadcasting journalist. I heard that once or twice from the late great Bobby the Brain Heenan. All right. Thanks.